It's not about the gift. It's the thought that counts. Anybody here ever said those words? You realize that usually when you say those words, it's because you've opened something up and you're disappointed at what you opened. You were expecting something, and that which is in the box or behind the paper didn't meet your expectations. But you want to be gracious. You want to be thankful. You don't want to be rude. You want to be polite. So it's not the gift, it's the thought that counts. Of course, through my years of gift giving, what I have discovered is the more thought I put into the gift, usually, the better the gift is. The more thought I give about the person I'm going to give the gift to, the more desire I have to find the exact right gift for the moment. Isaiah is speaking into a dark and desperate moment in Israel's history. God's people were surrounded by fear, by uncertainty, and the threat of invading nations. Yet into the darkness came God's gift, a gift that was well thought out, and a gift to definitely disappoint. Isaiah offers this gift to us in a surprising message of hope. For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. This is not just another child, not just another king. Isaiah says that the very name reveals his divine nature and his character and his mission. As we fast forward into what we call the Christmas story, Matthew picks up on this. Matthew chapter 1, verse 23 says, "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God is with us. Now, we'll get a little deeper into the God is with us part just a little bit later in this series, but today I want to focus more on the immediate question. And this is the real question of Christmas. How does Jesus, this child in a manger, fit in my life today? In the middle of your Christmas decorating, you probably have some spot in your house that's reserved for the manger scene. Yesterday, even when it was cold and windy, I was outside putting out the outside decorations, and I put up our little gingerbread village housey thing. And that went up first, and then the thing that went up was the manger scene. There's a spot in our yard that has sat for years, so this year I did something different. I moved it to a different spot. We have a spot in our house that I have a manger scene that was made by an aunt of mine who has long since left this earth, and it's got its own special spot. It's where it's going to go. But you know, this thing of fitting Jesus into my life isn't just about a spot. So to answer the question of how does Jesus fit in my life, instead of doing a traditional Mary, Joseph, baby Jesus, wise men, shepherds, angels, instead of doing that, this Christmas we're going to take a look at those four names that Isaiah gives to Jesus. And we're going to start with the name Wonderful Counselor. And the first thing when I read that, I just have to wonder, what does it mean that Jesus is Wonderful Counselor? I don't think Jesus has a couch that he wants me to come and lay on and tell him all about my life, because he knows all about my life. So maybe the way we understand this is we split the words in half. And the first word there is wonderful, which means awe-inspiring, miraculous, beyond human understanding. Then we look at the second word, and it's a counselor. And it means wise guy, perfect advisor, trusted advocate. Anybody here remember the name books? I don't even know if they have. I guess it's a name website these days. I don't know. But the name books were these books that you had that it came out and had all the names in them. And then as you flipped through the book and you looked at the book, you found your name, and it told you what your name meant. Maybe your name meant something like warrior or spear or bee. It told you the origin of your name. And even though maybe you didn't like the origin of your name and the meaning of your name, if you looked through the book and you didn't find your name, you were distressed, weren't you? I mean, where do I fit? I can't even make the book. They can't even my name has no meaning to it. And this is important because Isaiah felt this way. Where do I fit? How does all of this thing fit into my life? I mean, he's prophesying many years before Jesus is ever going to set foot on this planet. Many people today, they feel like the people in the name book. The video that we showed. How does this all fit? So let's take a moment and take a look at Jesus' resume. He gets the name Wonderful Counselor. Does he live up to that name? And so the question becomes, was Jesus wonderful? Well, yeah, I think he was. I mean, just take a look at Mark chapter 9, verse 15. As soon as the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. As you read through Scripture, everybody that met Jesus had a response. Some of them were amazed. They looked at Jesus like, oh my goodness, it's Jesus. And they were just waiting to see what he was going to do next. Some people were frustrated. You never think about that very much, but following Jesus around must have been very frustrating at times. You know who are probably the most frustrated people in the universe? His brothers and sisters. Could you imagine being the brother and sister of Jesus? The guy that probably gets straight A's in school, never does anything wrong, and always like, why can't you be more like your older brother? That's just got to be frustrating in that moment. Some people, when they encounter Jesus, they feel threatened. Their authority and their job and all of the things they had based their life on were basically going up in smoke because Jesus was changing all the rules, and I feel threatened by Jesus. But you know what? Nobody was ever neutral. It was never a whatever moment. It's like, oh yeah, been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, we've seen all this happen before. Jesus never was met with a neutral response. And when they saw him and they responded to him, no matter how you responded, his wonder could be seen. Not just the miraculous birth, how about we talk about his perfect life? 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 18 through 21, For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. Through him you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, so that your faith and hope are in God. Think about that. 33 years on this planet, and he never made a misstep. Never took an extra cookie out the cookie jar. Never disobeyed his parents. Always managed to meet curfew. Always managed to have his homework done on time. Always managed to do everything that he was told perfectly. That's pretty wonderful, don't you think? But that wasn't the only evidence that he gave us. We have wonder in his miracles. Think about this. He healed the sick, made the blind to see, the deaf to hear, the mute to speak, and the lame to walk. He is a walking, breathing, living hospital. Anybody that came to him with any disease, he could fix it. He met the needs of people, feeding thousands from a simple meal. And he did it twice. He showed compassion to those in society that were shunned, and he touched those that nobody else would ever bother touching. Because that's who Jesus was. But that wasn't all he did. He commanded nature by calming storms with a simple word, by walking on water like it was firm land. And when he stepped outside of nature, you understand he subdued the supernatural. Demons feared him in his presence because they knew exactly who he was and they knew what he could do. He told them to be silent. They had to obey. He told them to come out, and they had to come out. He had total control over that which we consider the supernatural. And let's not forget his wonderful power over death as he raised the dead. He called Lazarus from a tomb after he had been there for 3 days. He didn't have to do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. He just cried out, "Lazarus, come on down." And he walked out of that tomb. And ultimately, yeah, we see his wonderful power. Yep, in his own resurrection. I mean, it's one thing to raise somebody else from the dead. It's another thing to come walking out of a tomb all by yourself. A stone to be rolled away. A body that was beaten, broken, and crucified. Restored. And out of the grave. It's an interesting idea. Everything about Jesus points beyond human ability. Everything. From the moment he arrived on this planet as a baby until the moment he left the ascension, going up to the clouds saying, "I'll be back." Every step of his life was wonderful, powerful, able to do things that still today, let's be honest, sometimes they sound like myths and fairy tales. They sound like things that, oh my gosh, somebody had a vivid imagination and made it all up. The only problem is that it's part of history. And that history was predicted by men thousands and thousands of years before he, hundreds and hundreds of years before he ever showed up. So was Jesus wonderful? Yes, absolutely. There's no debating whether he was wonderful. But was Jesus a counselor? Again, I get the image of counselor. I think of this person that lives in has an office and it's all nice and clean and tidy, and they have all these books that they went to college to get, and they went to the college and they got them all stacked up on the bookshelf, and you walk in and they have you stretch out on a couch and they ask you all about your life and you tell them about your life and maybe they give you some good advice or maybe they don't give you any advice. It's just a matter of they're giving you a place to vent all of your frustrations. And I've seen counselors in the past, and this is my image. But that's not the image of a counselor, at least not in ancient Israel. See, a counselor was a strategist, a royal advisor, someone whose wisdom could change the future. Isaiah echoes this in Isaiah chapter 28, verse 29. All this also comes from the Lord Almighty, whose plan is wonderful and whose wisdom is magnificent. So ponder the life of Jesus for just a minute, and you begin to think about Jesus. Jesus demonstrated this through his wisdom. He always seemed to have the moment, right? People challenged him and tested him, and he always seemed to have all the right moves on the chessboard. Nobody could ever manage to put him in a checkmate. It was in his teaching. Who people had never heard teaching like that before. People had never thought about what he was saying. It basically inspired them to look at God differently. It was in his decisions. He always seemed to make all of those moves that he made was always the right decision, never the wrong decision. He showed his wisdom and the knowledge of the human heart. Think about all the time the Pharisees came to test him. How easy would it have been for Jesus just to say, boink, and just flick them away like they were ants. But he never had that moment. He had that moment. He listened to their test. He took in what they were telling him, and he said, hey, look, let me tell you about your heart. That's a scary thought. A counselor that can see my most inner self. A counselor that knows what I'm thinking before I think it. A counselor that knows all about how the world works. That's who Jesus is. A hiring manager once received a resume from an applicant where the applicant was asked to list their weakness. And in that weakness section, he said, none. And then to go with it, he used himself as his own reference. He didn't get the job. It was laughable because the applicant could not see their own need. Spiritually, we often do the exact same thing. We hand God our resume, our good moments, our strengths, our accomplishments, hoping it proves we're doing okay. You do realize that Jesus' resume had no weaknesses to it. It was complete. He was suited for the job of wonderful counselor. And Jesus didn't come to affirm our resume. He didn't come to check our boxes. He didn't come to say, hey, you're doing okay. This wonderful counselor where the name comes from was very, very personal. Because it's not just who he is. It's who we need. See, this wonderful counselor is all about my relationship with him. Me and the wonderful counselor. Now, maybe you're thinking, why do I need a counselor? I'm doing okay. The bills are all paid. The kids are all fed. And I even have a little bit left over to go out and do some Christmas shopping this year. Why do I need this? It's just another thing to put in my life. Why do you need a wonderful counselor? Because, well, life supposed to be is. There's my first type. I knew there was a typo there somewhere. I do this every week. Life is painful. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Folks, we carry burdens. Even the littlest among us have things that they struggle with. Even the oldest among us, you look back on your life and you probably carry burdens of regrets, things that you wish you had done differently. We're all going to face crossroads in our life. All are going to have decisions that we have to make. Every single one of us at some point in our life is going to have to deal with brokenness. Things not working out the way that we planned them, the way that we hoped for them. Sometimes it's just saying goodbye to loved ones. Sometimes it's dealing with things in my own life that just are broken. And that's where our counselor steps in. This wonderful counselor enters our world of chaos, and he brings clarity. I've gone through some very trying things in my life. I've made some very stupid decisions in my life. I could not imagine doing either without my wonderful counselor. That person that when I finally come to my senses, when I finally look at the mess that I'm living my life in, I can go home. Why do I need a wonderful counselor? Because reality is our wisdom fails. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12 says, there is a way that appears right, but in the end it leads to death. So there are lots of things that look right in my life in the moment. In the moment, this looks like an awesome decision. But sometimes I just run out of answers. I've met a lot of people that think they've got it all figured out, In fact, I used to stare at one of them every morning in the mirror. I've got it. I know how this all works. Then I realized one morning that if I can figure it all out, what do I need Jesus for, right? If I've got all the answers and I've got all the things figured, I don't need Jesus. I can be my own wonderful counselor. However, what I often forget is human wisdom is often short-sighted, emotional, and self-centered. You know, though, while my decisions were always right for me, because they were always about me. I won every single argument that I've ever been in because, you know what? I'm always right. That's how I make my decisions in my life. I don't go to the extreme to say, you know what? Let me think outside the box here. Am I really all that right? Am I just right for this moment because what I want to do in this moment means I can do it any way that I want as long as I say I'm right? See, it's a circular motion when it comes to our logic. And the reality is that we just don't have a great track record for discerning right from wrong. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 18 says, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil. I don't have the track record here. I've made plenty of wrong decisions. Along the way, maybe I've made a few right, but even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? Provided it has hands. You do understand my track record says that I can't trust my own wisdom. In fact, let's be very honest about myself. I have a hard time understanding me. Have you ever looked in the mirror after you've done something and said, why on earth did I do that? Why on earth did I even bother to try that? I don't even understand my own heart, according to Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Aside from my wonderful counselor, when I make decisions, my decisions are reactive. And let's face it, we run hot and cold. Some moments I'm all gung-ho charged, and the other moments kind of like, just leave me alone and let me sit in my chair with my remote and my soda pop and just, I want quiet. I need rest. I can't make another decision. We see, we want, we respond. Isn't that how it works? You realize the advertisers that work on television and YouTube, they're counting on this from us. We see it. Oh, look. There's a piece of fruit. We want it. Oh, it looks desirable to eat. We respond. We reach. We take. We eat. It's the same story since the beginning of time. Our hearts tell us to take and eat, often without fully understanding the consequences. Do you ever stop in that moment to say, you know, if I do this now, look down the road 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years? No. When I want, and I draw the line, it's good for this moment. Because we're all here and now creatures. This is how our logic and our counseling works. We need a counselor who sees what we can't, knows what we don't, and loves us more than we understand. That's Jesus, the wonderful counselor. And so it's not whether or not if he is the wonderful counselor. It all comes down to how am I supposed to respond to Jesus? And it's really not all that hard. I mean, it's really not that complicated at all because it just starts with a simple idea of listening to his voice. John chapter 10, verse 27 says, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. Have you ever noticed, and I don't know how many people still go to libraries today. I've never been a big library fan. Have you ever noticed how much trouble they go to keep a library quiet? Extra thick padded carpet? walls that have been filled, not paper thin. Spacing of the tables so that even a whisper conversation has separation. And if none of that works, you've got the librarian going, shh. Why do they go to all that trouble? It's because they understand something. People come to a library to learn. And you can't learn unless you can listen. And you can't listen unless you find some moments of quiet in your life. That's the trap. That's what they want. They always want to put more noise into my life. More things that are telling me more information, more stuff to process, more things that are coming in so I have to figure it all out. And they want to take away all of the silence. Because when you take away all of my silence, I can't hear the voice of my counselor. I can hear all of the other voices loud and clear, but not his. And for that, I have to make a point to listen. And sometimes that means I have to make a point to be quiet. And not just me be quiet. Make my life quiet. Because when I begin to listen, I get my second response. I have to trust his wisdom over my own. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. Let's face it, trusting is not one of those things that we do very well. As a matter of fact, don't you have to earn my trust? Am I just supposed to trust you because you say trust me? Well, yes, but I think Jesus has already earned our trust. Because with trust, there's always the element of the unknown. See, Jesus earned our trust because I don't know everything, but he has showed to me that he knows everything. He knows me backwards and forwards, inside out. He knows how many hairs are on my head. He knows my past. That's kind of scary. He knows my present. Okay, it's gotten a little better. He knows my future. Okay, that's really scary. Jesus knows everything about me. The reason I have to trust him, because in my here and now world, nothing can ever be fully understood by me. It has to come from God. That's what we call faith. Faith means leaning not on your own understanding, like the proverb said, but on his revealed truth. Leaning on his truth naturally leads to living by his direction. Trust always turns to action. And Jesus makes the invitation clear to us on once we do what we do, once we listen, once we trust. It's where we started our service this morning. It's the idea that I actually have to follow where he leads. John chapter 12, verse 26 says, whoever serves me must, not should, not can, not is able to. Whoever serves me must follow me. And where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. Usually when we say the word follow, we begin to get the image of denying ourselves and taking up a cross. But let's just step back for a moment. Because following means being where Jesus is. This is not about a physical location yet. Someday I will physically be where Jesus is, but that ain't today. It hasn't happened yet. If I listen and I trust, I will obey and do what Jesus asks of me. And that brings us to the heart of Christmas. How do I respond to the counselor? I listen, I trust, I follow, and his counsel becomes my very hope. Because you know what? Jesus is the wonderful counselor. We can bring him our worries, knowing that he will indeed listen. We can trust his wisdom knowing that he loves us, and we can follow him confidently knowing he leads us toward life with him. This Christmas, we don't just celebrate a baby in a manger. We want to honor the wonderful counselor who still speaks today in light, in the light of darkness.